A thing that looks like a police box standing in a junkyard. It can move anywhere.
Haven, concentrate on Sin. Give priority to the detectors and the navigation systems.
There is a corridor. And the corridor is time. It surrounds all things.
On display? I eventually had to go down to the cellar. That's the display department. With a torch. The lights are probably gone. So had the stairs.
Yours is number 6.
I am not a number. I am a person.
Welcome to British Invaders, episode 156. This is the podcast all about British science fiction television, and today we are continuing our discussion of Noah's Castle. This is Brian from Canada.
And this is Eamon from England. Hello.
Noah's Castle was a political children's TV show from 1980. It ran as 7 25-minute episodes on ITV, coming from ITV's Southern Regional Production Company.
And it's a show of what we might call speculative fiction. It shows a sort of near future for the time England that has descended into another dystopia. There are food shortages, there is hyperinflation, and there is fighting and rioting and chaos on the streets. And it's not really a terribly cozy catastrophe, as these sort of bits of fiction have been referred to in the past, Brian.
That's right. Basically, society is collapsing because no one can get any supplies, especially no one can get food, it seems. And we are seeing, you know, rioting and all of this unrest based on people trying to get food. And we are focusing on one family, the Mortimers, who are the center of this show, who have an isolated house that was bought because of this crisis, looking ahead towards it. And in particular, it's very well stocked. So Norman Mortimer, the father of this family, is hoarding and has all of these supplies that are in very high demand, and he is keeping them basically for his family.
That's right. And as the story develops, we get more and more news about the growing catastrophe, the fact that the radio tells us a state of emergency has been declared, and that the government has ordered the army onto the streets. And in fact, of course, we see the army in the end credits of each episode standing there with their sort of riot gear on. So it's all coming apart very rapidly, Brian.
That's right. And we also start hearing that the army has been ordered to shoot looters on site. And we find out that food hoarding has been outlawed. Now, this is very important because the central characters in this show have not only been hoarding food, but they have been keeping it secret. They have this very well-stocked cellar, and they have been keeping it as a secret because they don't want to be looted, and it's sort of something that has made them like social pariahs. But now, the hoarding that they're doing is actually illegal in this state of emergency. So what before they were just worrying about the criminals, the rabble, other people rioting, now they're also having to worry about the police and the state and all this riot gear and suppression and so on. And they don't know what might happen there. So their secret is even more grave.
And as we say, outside, you know, the situation becomes more and more dire. And we've got this concept of hyperinflation. And we're actually told that at one point, I think, that a kilo of potatoes is going for something like £400. And so you won't be surprised to hear that the British economy is on the verge of collapse, although perhaps we might say it's collapsed already at this point in this show. But things outside are dire, and there is the family in this house, well stocked, but conflict within the house and certainly conflict outside it, as characters like Cliff and Terry argue about the best way to try and distribute what resources they can get hold of.
Yes, that's right. And we also have a lot of tension inside the house. Mr. Gerald, the one person who is not a member of the family, who is staying with them and reaping the benefits of this hoard of food. He, as we mentioned earlier, he was Norman Mortimer's boss when, businesses were still operating and so on. And he was invited in to stay with them, sort of to curry favor. But as he starts to know more about what they're doing and understands that there is hoarding going on, he has this power over the family because he has this information. He can turn them in. And he starts making increasing demands on the family, some of which are rather sinister. And it sort of makes things rather unpleasant and very tense inside that house and inside the family. And meanwhile, Barry, who is one of the children, one of the sons in this house, a teenager, he is trying to get some supplies out to his friends. You know, he believes that, yeah, other people should have access to some of this food as well.
That's right. And another character that we've mentioned before, Vince Holloway, this sort of almost like mob boss, who his spies are watching the Mortimer's house quite closely, and they know that there are supplies in there, and it's going to come to some sort of further crisis, and Mr. Mortimer is prepared to take quite desperate measures. So it's a pressure cooker, really, Brian. It's all going to build up, you know, outside and inside the house. Things are just on the verge of exploding.
That's right. Vince Holloway is basically running a big street gang. And he has things like young boys running around and sort of sneaking around and hiding in bushes and things to spy on the Mortimers, to sort of see what is coming in and going out of that house, to try, you know, because they're suspicious about them having supplies.
Yep, interesting stuff. And again, it's, you know, one of these shows showing us all these different ways of dealing with a crisis that we've seen when we looked at other bits of sort of apocalyptic and post-apocalyptic fiction.
Yes, absolutely. And this show certainly has sort of these apocalyptic and post-apocalyptic ideas and sort of dystopian type ideas, but it really fundamentally is a very political show that is sort of about the politics that's was based on some of the real-world concerns of the time.
Are you expecting some sort of siege?
People will come crawling here for a bit of what we have.
Will you give it to them?
I certainly will not.
They're desperate. I mean, if they come here crawling.
They should have made provision. They still have time. They just don't think, that's all. It's their problem.
Cliff's right. Organising groups to help out.
Organising groups? He couldn't organise a paper bag. It needs background skills, knowledge, and training.
Yeah, Dad. But see, there's a difference. He's helping other people. You're not, are you? Sick.
Agnes! Agnes! You will understand one thing. Not a word of this, or I'll never lay the blame. Not a single word, or the whole family suffers. If Cliff wants to help the world and his brothers, that's...
So Noah's Castle is representing the difficulties of the time when it was written. And, you know, at that time, the UK was really struggling with strikes and indeed with some food and energy shortages.
Yeah, that's right. It's, you know, it's a snapshot of 70s Britain. It does it in this sort of dystopian near future of a vision of the near future. And as we've said so often, what we get for its teenage audience are various different sort of models and approaches to dealing with the crisis. And it's, you know, giving its audience something, I think, about the their society and telling them what's going on. And we've seen this when we talked about survivors and we talked about the changes. And I suppose the first example, of course, is the self-interested Mr. Mortimer, who's just out for him and his family, just wants to protect his family and make sure they survive what's coming, and does so by stockpiling and hoarding. So that's sort of like the first approach that we see.
Yes, and he is shown as someone who is very selfish and sort of centered on what happens to him and his immediate family. And he is really willing to go to extreme measures when it comes to anyone else. And as the show progresses, we find out more and more just how extreme he is in this this position and what he may or may not be willing to do. And as it goes on, we are forced to question his sanity more and more.
Okay, but then we also have these other characters who give us different approaches to dealing with the catastrophe.
Yeah, we get Terry and Cliff, these two young men who have sort of very different views, but both of them feel that they need to fix the problem. They need to find ways of getting food and getting it out to people. And Terry was the rebel, the one who was basically saying, okay, society is broken, the laws aren't working anymore, we have to find the food, steal it, and get it out to people so they have food. And his ideas about who should have that food, well, he was sort of looking at that it should be young people and people who have a good potential future. So there were sort of some dark ideas there in how he was looking at that. And then you had Cliff being much more idealistic, and he was looking at, well, can we lobby elements of the government and different organizations and so on to try to get some food legally, legitimately, and then give it away as a charitable thing? And he was focusing on the people who need it the most, in the sense of getting it to the elderly, the sick, and so on, people who really wouldn't be able to survive without having some extra food available at these times.
And then we have, I suppose, the more clearly villainous characters on the other side of the coin. We've got Vince Holloway, as you say, the boss of a street gang who's really only interested in stealing stuff and selling it for everything he can get on the black market. Clearly the sort of bad guy. And then we have this, perhaps, you know, in a way, the more interesting character within the house, the one you've mentioned, Brian, Jack May, playing Mr. Gerald, the boss, who comes to live with the Mortimers and who takes this really sort of almost feudal sort of view of what he's entitled to, and that he's entitled to whatever his employee has. And it's not just sort of, you know, the food that he's talking about. He's talking about other rights as well, or sort of suggesting that. And all in all, I think quite dark and challenging stuff for its children's TV time slot in a way, Brian.
Yes, Mr. Gerald is a very sinister character indeed. And as the course of the story goes on, we find out that he is expecting that because he was Mortimer's boss, and because, you know, he has this position of power because of what he knows, he's expecting them to sort of pay tribute to him, that he should have access to whatever he wants, and he's expecting Mrs. Mortimer to basically wait on him and serve him food how and when he wants it and so on. And he's expecting payment from the teenage daughter, Nessie, as well. And that gets to some rather unpleasant ideas there with his interest in her. And how he's expecting to be treated.
Okay, so it's fascinating stuff in a way that it again gives us all these different approaches to dealing with the disaster that has happened.
That's right. Yeah, there's a hint at one point that teenagers out, you know, in other parts of the area may be turning to prostitution in order to get a little bit of food. There's, you know, some of these rather difficult ideas that are either stated in an outright way or are alluded to, and it's some pretty intense stuff.
Yep, absolutely. And of course, we're given the sort of, I suppose, the teenage audience option of choosing, or, you know, which option, which approach would we have taken? Whose side are we on?
That's right. And, you know, there are some definite open questions there. So it's interesting to see how it presents these. It's quite good.
Pretty soon, there are going to be a lot of people that won't be able to afford a loaf of bread or a can of beans, never mind a pair of shoes. Oh, the government yaks on.
We must stand together, fight them on the beaches, fight them in the streets. All that patriotic stuff. And where does it get us when it takes a wheelbarrow load of money to buy a loaf of bread? What's going to happen then?
Search me.
Well, I'll tell you what's going to happen. Anarchy and chaos, that's what. Look, you could help. There's a new organization forming. Not just here, but all over the country. Now, some of the organizers have been here talking to people, meeting people who might be interested in joining them.
So let's get into the good and the bad, some of our own thoughts about what we thought about this show. So, Eamon, what did you like about Noah's Castle?
Well, I think the best thing about Noah's Castle is the idea, the approach to its intended audience in this sort of older children, early teenage sort of time slot, and the whole idea of looking at British society coming apart at the seams and giving, you know, these different approaches to how would you deal with this situation, I think it's fascinating. I think it's a good idea from John Rau Townsend's original book, and I think it's very well adapted, certainly in the setup parts at least.
Yes, I would agree. I think this is really a show of ideas and a show of characters. It's sort of idea-driven and character-driven. And on those fronts, it stands up. It really works very well.
Okay. What else did you notice that stood out in this production?
I particularly like the dynamic of the family, the people living in the house. You had six different characters in this one house, and the relationships between all of them were actually quite complex. There was a lot there, and it was delivered in such a way that it was very relatable and very understandable. So you had these complex ideas about where the father was and his intentions and what he thought about and how he was dealing with his different children. You had Jack May's character relating to just about everyone else. You had the children relating to each other and relating to the parents, and the sort of views between how the different children looked at each other. It was quite a complex set of relationships, and watching it in the show, it just played out in a very natural way, and a way that was very easy to follow, and I think that was a real strength of this show.
Okay. The performances?
I thought on the whole they were pretty good.
Yeah, I think so. I think the leads are very good. There's some of the extras in some of the crowd scenes do stand out, I think, for the wrong reasons. There's a couple of nervous grins at the camera and so on in the background. But the lead performances are pretty good. And it's very interesting that, you know, Mr. Mortimer is presented quite deliberately in a sort of harsh and not necessarily sympathetic way.
That's true. He's the central character. but he is not portrayed sympathetically, and we get the idea that the things that he is doing, initially we think, you know, initially it's portrayed as something that has a lot of value, that he may be doing some things that are very good for his family, and maybe setting things up for barter for a while, and, you know, doing things that may be quite valuable. And as it goes on, we find out that he is really causing harm to everyone else, and sort of really going to extreme measures that are rather unpleasant.
Okay. I suppose its small screen production values mean that we don't get an awful lot of big crowd scenes. You know, it is mainly the characters we've talked about, although there is a food riot in the fifth episode, which I thought looked quite convincing. That was quite well done.
That was pretty good. There is sort of a problem here that they're talking about these huge issues of society collapsing and no one being able to get food and so on. And they have, presumably due to budget limitations, for the most part, they can't show us any of these things happening. They have to tell us that they're happening. So we end up with the closing narrations, which are pretty good, but the closing narrations saying, you know, there are food riots because no one can get food, and there are power cuts. And, you know, we hear references, things the characters bring up and so on, to lots of big things happening, and we really don't get to see those. So I think that's a bit of a weakness, that they couldn't show us all of the things that are happening and are causing this situation.
Yeah, I think that's a fair point. And I think because they can't show us the big stuff, it does perhaps drag a little bit in the middle part of the series. And I thought episodes sort of 3, 4, and 5 were... The pacing dropped a bit, and it was, there seemed to be some sort of padding going on there. I don't know how that reflects the novel, because, as I say, we haven't read the book, unfortunately.
Yeah, I didn't find the pacing in the middle to be too bad, but what I did find is that in general, while this was extremely strong on sort of ideas and characters, it was not all that strong on plot. There is a plot there, but it's not a terribly strong, gripping plot. It's much more about the characters, the ideas, what people are willing to do, how characters to relate to each other. It's much more about those things rather than the story in a conventional way. I think it's okay to do it that way, but in some respect, that's a bit of a weak point, that it was not a little bit stronger on the plot front.
Yeah, it is. Yes, as you say, it is a slight problem here. And of course, that will mean that as we get towards the end, there isn't really a big plot resolution to wrap up. We won't give it away, but, you know, we perhaps don't get the satisfying conclusion that we might hope for.
That's right. We do get some interesting things in the end, but it definitely is a different way of constructing a show as opposed to some more plot-driven things that you might see a little more often.
Okay. We mentioned the music, which is another example of fine electronic music for a theme tune, so that's quite good. I don't know what else. Anything else you wanted to say on the plus or minus side about this show, Brian?
I don't think so. I think that covers most of it.
So it's time for us to get to our own particular recommendations. And I think it's your turn to start, Brian. What would you have to say about Noah's Castle for our listeners?
Okay, this is a slightly tricky one. It's a very good show, but it does have this sort of slightly strange way that it is a little bit dated, but more to the point, it is not a strong story-driven and plot-driven show. I would say if you enjoy sort of science fiction idea-based, you know, discussing these hypothetical ideas, if you enjoy that as a basis for a show, or if you enjoy character tensions as a basis for a show, then absolutely this is one you should check out, because it's very good on those fronts. if you're a little bit more of a story and plot person, then maybe this isn't the one. So I would say it's very good. So a cautious recommendation in that it's not for everyone, but it's definitely a good show and a very well-made show.
Okay. It's an interesting one. Although it came out in 1980, it's clearly a 1970s show. It's obviously lagging far behind the awesome might of Survivors, but perhaps we should be comparing it with children's shows from the 70s, which puts it in the league with The Changes, Children of the Stones, and Escape into Night, which we've all mentioned. And I'd have to say, Brian, I'd put it probably behind all those shows. I would go for... I would look at Children of the Stones and The Changes and Escape into Night before getting to this one. But if you are looking for a sort of snapshot of the time, if you want to see a little sort of snippet of what Britain was like in the mid-70s and the sort of end part of the decade, then yes, go and check it out. It's not too expensive. Another cautious sort of maybe yes, no from me as well, Brian. But as ever, we would like people to let us know if they remember the show or if they watch the show after listening to us. And in particular, if anybody's read the book, we'd love you to join in on the Facebook page and tell us about that.
Yes, absolutely. There are some very interesting things in this show. It has some very strong stuff in it indeed. So, in summary, Noah's Castle introduced us to a near future dystopia or almost post-apocalyptic type environment where there are extreme food shortages and also supply shortages, and there are riots being caused by this. We are also introduced to the Mortimers, this family of five with an additional guest, so six people living in this one house where they have this hoard of food that they collected before the problems began. And we do lots of inspection of the relationships in this family and the politics of the situation and the different approaches to what people might do in this situation and how different people might cope with it.
Okay, interesting stuff from ITV in 1980. And please join us next time. We are switching to Channel 4. We're in 1996 and we're looking at the final work of one of the great writers of British television, Dennis Potter. We're looking at his show Cold Lazarus, but we'll also be talking briefly about the sort of non-science fiction show Karaoke that came before it that sort of sets up Cold Lazarus.
Yes, that will be something quite different to look at for sure. Some interesting things in that one too. You can reach us at BritishInvaders@gmail.com, and you can find us at BritishInvaders.com. We are part of the Geek Culture Network, so if you go to TheGeekCultureNetwork.com, you can find us there. We have a Facebook group, and you can find it by searching for British Invaders on Facebook.
And you can also find us on the Voice of Geeks Network at VogNetwork.com, where you'll find us going out broadcast on Mondays and Tuesdays, but also you'll be able to find some of our other episodes there as well.
Yes, and there's a forum based on that site as well, so lots of good stuff from these different sites. So, thank you for listening, and this is Brian from Canada, signing off.
Yes, thank you very much. And until next time, this is Eamon drawing up the drawbridge to his castle and signing off.